Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Chris Christie, New Jersey's brash governor, delivered the keynote address last night at the Republican National Convention to an enthusiastic audience.
Thank you. Thank you all very much. Thank you. Well, this stage and this moment are very improbable for me, a New Jersey Republican, delivering the keynote address to our national convention. From a state with 700,000 more Democrats than Republicans, a New Jersey Republican stands before you tonight, proud of my party, proud of my state, and proud of my country.
Christie talked about his parents, especially his mother, who he said spoke the truth bluntly, directly, and without much varnish, adding, "I am her son." He touted his accomplishments in the Garden State, including taking on the teachers' union. He compared what he said the Democrats believe about teachers to his party's view.
They believe the educational establishment will always put themselves ahead of children, that self-interest will always trump common sense. They believe in pitting unions against teachers, educators against parents, lobbyists against children. They believe in teachers' unions. We believe in teachers.
Well, today on Radio Times, we analyze Chris Christie's speech, the message he was sending his party, his state, and the rest of the country. We have two guests who have joined us by telephone. John Weingart is the Associate Director of the Eagleton Institute of Politics at Rutgers University. John, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
It's a pleasure. Good morning.
Good morning. Also with us is Steve Carnacki. He writes about politics for Salon, also co-hosts MSNBC's The Cycle on weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern. And Steve, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Steve, let me begin with you. If a primetime keynote convention speech is supposed to be about the nominee, supposed to be about rallying the troops, winning over the undecideds, did Chris Christie accomplish that last night?
You know, I'm not sure, and I was really kind of going back and forth about this when I was thinking about it afterwards, because my initial reaction was it was too sort of me-centric. It was too transparently about positioning himself for 2016. You know, he's had a problem, I think, the last few months. It's certainly, I think, driven people in the Romney campaign nuts, where he's, on a couple occasions, talked about the 2016 Republican nomination as if it's a foregone conclusion that it's going to be open, which would mean that Mitt Romney is going to lose this year and won't be the incumbent president seeking re-election. You know, he's talked about how I'll be more ready in 2016 and won't be an issue next time around. And I think when you have that sort of background and you listen to his speech last night, my initial take was it did sound like a guy who was more interested in electing himself in 2016 than Romney in 2012. Although, you know, the point's been made that if you look back at past keynote addresses, you know, there really are no rules for these things. And Barack Obama in 2004 certainly talked about himself a lot in his speech. That was a very personal speech. I guess the counter to that is that Obama's speech was really more of an allegory. It was a story about America, about the possibility of America, and how his life sort of was an expression of that. You know, I don't think the Romney campaign is terribly upset by it. To me, I think that the biggest takeaway is that, you know, the Chris Christie who people sort of have sort of gotten to know the last few years, who's, you know, these really sort of colorful quips to hecklers or to reporters or to political opponents, that Christie, that unscripted Christie, is different than the Christie who's reading from a prepared text. And I think that might have been the biggest problem he had last night is, you know, when he's reading from a speech, he can come across as a lot more average than when he's just responding to a random question.
John, just picking up on that, and clearly a scripted Christie reading from a teleprompter, but I did notice that when he finally did mention Mitt Romney, he was well into his speech. What did you make of it last night?
I was impressed. One of the things that's impressive about Chris Christie is the range of rhetorical arrows he has in his quiver to one moment be attacking and another moment be conciliatory and to one moment be talking about broad principles of disagreement and then other times finding common ground in the same speech. And I was impressed last night how many of those arrows were sort of off limits by the nature of the Romney campaign, that he couldn't you might have thought he could have talked about Romney as a role model of someone who was a governor in a largely Democratic state and had some successes, mm-hmm. but that's not something the Romney campaign wants to talk about. So he didn't do that. I thought he would attack Obama more on leadership, which he has done in New Jersey and around the country the last few months quite effectively, I thought. And I thought more effectively than he did last night.
I noticed, and this is to you, John, and then Steve, I'll toss it to you as well. I noticed that the largest applause that Chris Christie got last night had to do with teachers. Does that surprise you, John?
No, but that's it was an interesting moment, I thought, because one of the strengths he has in New Jersey is he talks about explicitly that on education policy, the Christie administration and the Obama administration are pushing largely the same policies. And while he has been very strong and effective in attacking the teachers' union, he also speaks in terms of the common ground on policy. And last night, maybe understandably with that audience, but he didn't do that. It was just about attacking the teachers' union, which has been popular in New Jersey and probably more so across the country.
And seemed to be popular with the audience as well. Steve, let me just quote something that Chris Christie said last night about teacher tenure. He said, real teacher tenure reform demands accountability and ends the guarantee of a job for life regardless of performance. They said it would never happen, but for the first time in 100 years with bipartisan support, you know the answer. We did it. You wrote about this morning in Salon. Can you put some meat on those bones there?
Sure. Well, it's interesting because he had this theme. This is a recurring theme in his speech. They said it was impossible in New Jersey. I'm a conservative Republican. I have to deal with a Democratic legislature, and yet I accomplished X. And teacher tenure is one of those things, and it's true. He signed, I think it was 3 weeks ago, he signed a teacher tenure reform bill. It passed the legislature, the Democratic legislature, earlier this summer. But I think to listen to sort of the combative tone in his speech last night, if you were a viewer outside of New Jersey, you would have gotten the impression that this was, full-scale legislative war between Christie and the teachers' union and the teachers' union's Democratic defenders. And it's true that sort of rhetorically Christie has been going after the teachers' union since he became governor. But when you look at how the legislation actually took shape, it passed unanimously in both houses of the legislature. It was crafted with input from the teachers' union. The teachers' union ended up supporting its passage. There's all sorts of different reasons that the different players had to sort of play along with Christie on this, and I think he certainly should get credit. If you think this is a good achievement, he should certainly get credit for making it a priority, for really sort of talking about it so much in the public square. But when you got down to it, there were plenty of Democrats who favored the basic principles that were involved here. The teachers union itself, I think, was anxious to come to some kind of a deal on it because they were tired of being a punching bag. They wanted the issue off the table. And certainly Christie himself had made it a priority. So what that, is that really a testament to some sort of, superhuman feat on Christie's part that Washington could learn from? No, to me it's just sort of it's what happens when both parties sort of share a broad principle, and when sort of the relevant interest groups do as well, and then compromise is possible, and that's what happened here. I don't think there's a great national lesson in that necessarily.
Well, but even picking up on that, John, and Chris Christie talked a lot about bipartisanship last night. He talked about compromise, and I'm not sure even looking at that audience, which tends to be the party faithful, whether that's a message that the members in Tampa really believe in.
I was struck by that, too, that it seemed like the design of his speech was to show the broad range of the Republican Party, from those who don't believe in compromise to those who do, which was an interesting state of affairs, and that it was, in that audience, slightly courageous to use the word compromise twice. Mm-hmm. And as Steve said, that's been the nature of the successes he's had in New Jersey has been, there's certainly been a lot of leadership and taking of positions, but then compromising with the legislature to get some things done. So I don't know. I thought some of what Christie said about Romney, when he did get to talk about Romney, more clearly applied to Christie than at least it's been shown so far to apply to Romney. When he said, Christie said, he will tell us the hard truths we need to hear, and real leaders don't follow polls, they change polls. I think you can fairly make that argument that Governor Christie has governed that way for the last 3 years, but you know, so far those are not sentences you'd automatically apply to Romney.
Well, in fact, let me play a section from Chris Christie's speech where he speaks directly about that.
You see, I believe we have become paralyzed by our desire to be loved. Now, our founding fathers had the wisdom to know that social acceptance and popularity were fleeting, and that this country's principles needed to be rooted in strengths greater than the passions and the emotions of the times. But our leaders today have decided it's more important to be popular, to say and do what's easy, and say yes rather than to say no, when no is what is required.
Steve, what's Chris Christie saying there? What's he, who, and what is he referring to?
Well, no, I agree with what John is saying. I mean, that certainly sounds like a description of Christie's governorship, or how Christie views his governorship and wants his governorship to be seen. And I don't think you'd necessarily say at this point it's a fair assessment of how Mitt Romney as a candidate has presented himself. And I think that struck me throughout his speech. There was a lot of talk in his speech about how we need leadership. We need leaders who are going to tell us hard truth, tell us things we don't want to hear. We need this bold, decisive, courageous leadership. There was no follow-up to that at any point, though, where he got specific. You know, what are the hard truths that the Americans need to hear? You know, what are the specific solutions, you know, to these big problems that we face? He didn't get into that at all, and I think, you know, part of that is Romney has not, you know, outlined that. I mean, a good example of this, you look at Romney and Ryan, if you start getting into the budget plans that they've put out there, it said they're not going to run on the Paul Ryan budget. If you look at the Paul Ryan budget, the math doesn't work unless Paul Ryan gets specific about what, you know, what deductions, what loopholes in the tax code he wants to tear out. Well, there are some, you know, very popular deductions in there that people take advantage of, you know, every year, millions of people. Some of that's going to have to go to make, you know, Paul Ryan's numbers work. If Mitt Romney wants to emulate that in any way, the same applies there. He doesn't want to talk about that at all. Those would be hard truths you would have to tell people at some point, and so far the Romney campaign has been unwilling to.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. We are deconstructing New Jersey Governor Chris Christie's keynote speech last night at the Republican National Convention in Tampa, Florida. We watched the speech. Did you? We want to know what you make of what Chris Christie said, how he said it, what he didn't talk about. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Talking with Steve Kornacki. He writes about politics for Salon, co-host of MSNBC's The Cycle on weekdays at 3. John Weingart is the associate director of the Eagleton Institute of Politics at Rutgers University. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Moore College of Art and Design, offering graduate programs for men and women in art education, interior design, and studio art. Classes are scheduled to accommodate working adults. Now accepting applications for summer 2013. Drop-in tours will be held every first Thursday evening of the month, beginning September 6th. More information online at moore.edu. Graduate studies at Moore College of Art and Design. Inspiring new careers.
4 years ago, Republicans nominated John McCain for president.
I have a privilege given few Americans, the privilege of accepting our party's nomination for president of the United States.
This week, Mitt Romney will accept the party's nomination in Tampa. I'm Mara Liasson. Join us for special coverage from NPR News.
Tonight at 8 on WHYY.
The Republican National Convention is in full swing, and so is Democratic criticism that today's GOP does not understand women's issues, a criticism fueled by recent comments by some conservative candidates about rape and abortion. We'll ask our diverse panel of women commentators on the left and the right. It's our Beauty Shop Roundtable, and that's next time on Tell Me More.
this afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen talking with Steve Carnacki and John Weingart about Governor Chris Christie's speech last night in Tampa. We're talking about what he said, what he didn't say, also his place and prominence on the national political stage. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Let me play another clip from last night's speech. And this is where Chris Christie is really touting a lot of the accomplishments that he sees in New Jersey. Let's listen.
Now, there were those who said it couldn't be done, that the problems were too big, too politically charged, and too broken to fix. But we were on a path we could no longer afford to follow. Now, they said it was impossible, this is what they told me, to cut taxes in a state where taxes were raised 115 times in the 8 years before I became governor. That it was impossible to balance a budget at the same time with an $11 billion deficit. But 3 years later, we have three balanced budgets in a row with lower taxes. We did it.
John, is he talking about the Jersey comeback as he describes it?
Well, he certainly shied away from that phrase. He is, and I think there's at least a half-truth in there Democrats, certainly, at the end of the Corzine administration that preceded his, were saying that there probably needed to be an increase in tax revenue in order to come up with balanced budgets. And Christie came in and, instead of doing that, made cuts and made decisions about the extent to which to fund the state pension program. But he's right that the policy on taxes was very different, and he made it very clear that any tax increase was not going to happen. And while Democrats made some efforts to pass one, he quickly vetoed them. The part where all governors do this is, whether of both parties, is bragging about having a balanced budget when the state constitution in every state requires that, and every state manages to do it. And then when governors seek a national stage, they all say that they did that. But it's true, but not significant.
Yes, I believe, like, I have heard that before. Steve, what's interesting, he did not talk about the unemployment rate in New Jersey, which is something like 9.8% above the national average.
Yeah, he didn't talk about that, and he didn't talk about his current, his current push for tax cuts, which seems to be stalling, which seems to finally be meeting with Democratic resistance, more unified Democratic resistance, and is not something that maybe he'll be able to brag about as a bipartisan achievement. I think Paul Krugman made the point earlier this week in a column where he basically said, governors probably do get too much credit when their home state's economy is doing well. They probably get too much blame when it's going the other way. But Christie has been telling the story of New Jersey, and Republicans across the country have kind of picked up on this, this story of New Jersey as sort of a model of what Republican leadership could be doing, and that the Obama administration and Democrats in Washington haven't been doing. So if you're going to play that game and the unemployment rate starts moving towards 10%, you're going to have some egg on your face. In fact, it struck me, I think it was maybe remembering this wrong, the Oregon delegation yesterday at the during the roll call of the states at the Republican convention, where the leader of the Oregon delegation called his state the New Jersey of the West.
Oh.
And the idea there seemed to be, hey, look, we're kind of we see ourselves as a blue state that's applying, Republican principles. And so this idea of, Christie as a model of national Republican leadership, I think, has really taken off. If you're gonna play that game, then you got to answer for the unemployment rate at some point.
Well, and just to give I'm not sure it's quite a shout out to Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett. I'll put this to you, John. Not invited to speak at the convention. The GOP chairman, Rob Gleason, is quoted as saying, "In Pennsylvania, we're not flashy. We're not here today, gone tomorrow." And it is interesting to compare and contrast the styles of these two governors who share a border.
It is interesting, although Corbett was explicit when he was running for governor that Chris Christie was his model and that he was going to do in Pennsylvania. I mean, one of the benefits Christie has had nationally is the oddity of New Jersey's election cycle, where governors are elected in an off year when there's only New Jersey and Virginia electing governors, so that new governors always get a little more attention than they might otherwise. But Christie, by coming in the way he did and really hitting the ground running, did become a model for many, or at least a talking point model for many of the Republicans running for governor in 2010, many of whom were elected, like Corbett.
Steve, I don't often quote the New York Post, but there was a story about a Romney wanting Chris Christie as a running mate and Christie saying no, believing that or saying that Romney was going to lose. Now, Chris Christie said that that's completely false, but it was floated out there. What should we make of that, if anything?
The idea that Romney wanted Christie and Christie made this stand where he didn't want to leave New Jersey and maybe thought Romney was going to lose, I don't buy that at all. I do buy that the people around Chris Christie wanted, if not this story, a story like this out there, for a couple of reasons. I think the biggest one is, Christie's doing this dance when he steps on the national stage like this, when he flirts with running for president last year, when his name is floated as a VP prospect for months this year, when he goes down to Tampa and speaks at the Republican National Convention. There's a certain risk that comes with that, given that he governs a blue state and he's facing re-election in 2013. I mean, his poll numbers in New Jersey are fairly good right now, especially for a Republican. But I think he'll still be doing extremely well next year. If he runs for re-election, it can get 54 or 55% of the vote. I think he'd be doing really well to get that. So he just doesn't have the kind of margin for error that a Republican governor in a more Republican-friendly state would have. And so, the Republican Party brand, the National Republican Party brand, I think, not very popular in a state like New Jersey, so there's a risk of associating too closely with that. And there's also a risk of just making, having it look like, hey, the voters of this state elected me this job, and now I'm doing my best to ignore the state and move on to something bigger. I think he's really sensitive to that impression. So if you can get a story out there, that makes it look like, I picked New Jersey over going on the national stage, well, that's good. And then B, this little bit that was in the New York Post story about how Christie's looked at Romney and judges him to be a loser. Well, Romney's, he may win the presidential election this year, but Romney is going to lose New Jersey. He's going to lose New Jersey probably by a significant margin. And if Chris Christie's going to be reelected next year, he's going to need to win the votes of a fair number of people who will vote for Barack Obama this fall. So those are people who probably share the judgment that Mitt Romney's a loser. And, if they happen to hear that Christie secretly or privately thinks that too, maybe that reflects well on him in their eyes. And I just, to me, though, the biggest takeaway from the story is it is probably the biggest single reason why I don't think Chris Christie was ever going to be Mitt Romney's running mate. It's because there was this sense within the Romney campaign that Christie, more than your average vice presidential prospect, was out for himself, and you'd have to deal with potential distractions like this where he's looking for, what's in it for me in 2013, what's in it for me in 2016, and making sure, leaking stories or whatever to get that angle out there. I don't think they were comfortable with that at all.
Interesting. And I do want to get to our callers. John, this goes back a month or so, but Chris Christie was one of the Republicans who said that Mitt Romney should release his tax returns, and I can't imagine that endeared him to the Romney people.
Yeah, I would imagine that's the case, and I think that and there'd be a number of more substantive positions he's taken on evolution, climate change, science in general that would probably have been a problem if he was picked. But I think what he has said about his national ambitions from the beginning are entirely credible, that he on some level never imagined he'd be governor of New Jersey and never imagined he'd be a national star, and he's enjoying it and making the most of it, but that he really wanted to stay as governor and didn't think this was the right time to run for president if there's ever going to be one, and didn't want to be vice president and doesn't want a position in the cabinet, and people are going to continue to ask him about that endlessly, but it'll rings very true to me when I hear him talk about it.
Well, that's interesting. And that's John Weingart. He's the associate director of the Eagleton Institute of Politics at Rutgers University in New Jersey. Steve Kornacki, also with us, writes about politics for Salon, and he co-hosts MSNBC's The Cycle, a new show on MSNBC, 3 o'clock in the afternoon Eastern time. And we're taking calls, talking about New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, his speech last night, and his policies and politics. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. And, of course, we want to hear from our New Jersey callers. I see everyone calling us from Pennsylvania. But let's get Jonathan from Washington's Crossing to join us. Jonathan, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi there, Marty.
Hi.
All right. So my question has to do with the fact that Chris Christie and speakers before him really emphasized the need for bipartisan leadership and compromise in their speech. And I think Chris Christie said that he did that as governor in New Jersey, and that Obama has really divided the nation and really been the one who hasn't extended his hand. But it seems to me that the GOP is really the party that's been shunning compromise and become the party of no over the past 4 years. So my question is, can Mitt Romney and the Republican Party really embrace these values of leading with compromise and truly governing, or are they still the party of no, and is Mitt Romney really going to have a lot of trouble becoming the compromising man that he needs to be?
I appreciate the call, John. Can I toss that to you, Steve? Because it gets us into a sort of a wider discussion about Romney and certainly the politics of Washington, D.C. Something that Chris Christie says at a convention, does that in any way influence what the candidates or whoever wins the White House is going to do?
Yeah. I mean, that stuff in the speech jumped out at me too. I was, I was expecting when Christie sort of talked up his own bipartisan record in New Jersey that he was going to make a more explicit, and unfortunately, President Obama has chosen the path of polarization and partisanship. That's sort of a standard standard Republican message, and I think that is a common message, and you hear it a lot from Republicans, and that unfortunately Obama chose partisan warfare. When Republicans start talking about bipartisanship in that sense, they're really delivering, I think, a partisan message where it's, hey, we're the compromisers, we're the ones willing to reach out, and too bad the other side is just engaged in partisan warfare and won't deal with us. So there's sort of an attempt to kind of rally troops with a message like mm-hmm. that. But I just, I think that the point about the dynamics of Washington right now it is spot on, because if you look at, I talked about the teacher tenure bill earlier in New Jersey and how that sort of came about, and it really is, it's a classic compromise. It's an agenda item for Chris Christie. It's something he talked about publicly. It's something he wanted to get done. And it's something the other side had interest in getting done too, so there was room for compromise, and they hashed out a deal. And I look at what's happened in Washington the last few years. I can think of a number of examples of this, but the one that sticks out the most would be healthcare. This was a major agenda item for Barack Obama. He wanted to get it done, and his initial approach was a bipartisan approach. He took an idea that he had not campaigned on, the individual mandate, an idea that had Republican roots, the individual mandate, and he used that as an attempt to start a dialogue with Republicans and to build legislation that Republicans would presumably be interested in supporting. It was, at the heart of Mitt Romney's plan in Massachusetts. It was the Heritage Foundation's original plan, all of these things. That was his way of trying to open a bipartisan dialogue. And the Republican response in Washington is a lot different than the Democratic response in New Jersey on teacher tenure. And as Republicans looked at this guy offering them essentially what had been their own idea, and then they suddenly decided, we don't like that idea anymore. We're not interested in compromising. And Tom Mann and Norm Ornstein, who are two veteran Congress watchers, really historically been middle-of-the-road guys, wrote a book this year mm-hmm. that really got into this phenomenon, and they basically said that they're really troubled by the Republican Party in Washington in the Obama era has really begun behaving like a parliamentary party, and that is they see their role only as objecting to and obstructing the other party's agenda, and their basic contention is our system isn't built for this kind of thing. And again, I think the power center in today's Republican Party really is the House. It really is on Capitol Hill. I just look at Mitt Romney coming in there. He may have all the bipartisan intent in the world. I don't know, but if the power is coming from the House, and this is how the House now functions, I don't see how he'd have any ability to compromise with Democrats without facing a mutiny.
And I should add that Norman Ornstein was a guest on Radio Times talking about that book. Let me get Mike from East Falls to join us. And Mike, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
As you've already pointed out, Christie used the word bipartisan twice, and that sort of assures people like me, who frankly don't appreciate the extremism on either side of the aisle. To the gentleman's, so he was really appealing to people like me, the independent people. I'm hoping that these so-called swing states clearly become not red or blue, but purple. We need some independent people that'll that'll sort through this. But to that gentleman's remark about the partisanship. For 2 years, Reid and Pelosi told the Republicans that they were absolutely irrelevant to the process. So what reaction did they really expect? Parliamentary procedure? They brought it upon themselves, for crying out loud. That's the reality of it, isn't it?
Well,
thank
Mike,
you very much.
Mike, thanks for calling into Radio Times. John, let me take the first part of his question. He describes himself as an independent, and looking at people, voters in New Jersey, there are a lot of independents in New Jersey.
There are. There are roughly a third of the voters call themselves independents, by which they mean they don't vote in primaries and don't register in a party, and most of them tend to lean one way or the other. But there are. A lot of independence.
Yeah. And do you want to take the second part, Steve? I mean, we've done whole shows about, you know, who's more partisan or bipartisan.
Can I just say something in terms of Mike's comment?
Yes, please. Go ahead, John.
The Republicans controlled the House of Representatives from 1995 to 2007, and the Democrats then controlled it for 4 years. And now the Republicans have for two. So I think the ethos of the House that has evolved over the last 15, 20 years, there's been a lot more Republican leadership than Democratic leadership in that time, but it probably has some blame to go with both parties. What I was struck in the Christie speech last night was, one of the things I was struck with was the sentence of, "We are demanding that our leaders stop tearing each other down and work together to take action on the big things facing America." And I wondered, as people listened, independent voters listened, right, whose picture came to mind when you hear that sentence? Is it Obama and Biden, or is it people in the House and maybe the Senate?
That's interesting. Steve, we have to say goodbye to you in about a minute and a half here. Tonight is Paul Ryan. Tomorrow night is Mitt Romney. What, if anything, do you anticipate?
My guess is we'll hear more, in the primetime hour at least, we will hear the name Obama mentioned more. In the 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock hour last night when you had Ann Romney and Chris Christie, I think Christie, the closest he came, was saying the president, or Mr. President at one point. He didn't actually invoke Obama, and obviously, Ann Romney didn't either. In the earlier hours, you had more of sort of traditional red meat, where Republicans were railing against the, didn't build it line and the welfare, the welfare stuff they've been bringing up lately, and that's something that obviously resonates with their base and resonates with a lot of people in the hall. I expect there's going to be more of a frontal attack on Obama tonight and tomorrow, more of an explicit case about why, from the Republican standpoint, the administration's been a failure, and then there's a need to make a change. We didn't get that last night. I wasn't expecting it in Ann Romney's speech. I was expecting more of it in Chris Christie's speech.
Well, and I have to say, maybe I'm just getting old, but isn't 10:30 kind of late to deliver a primetime speech on a Tuesday night, Steve?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I guess one of those things, you got to think of the whole country, though. If you're out in California, out in the West Coast, it's only 7 o'clock out there, so I guess that's the hour where you get your maximum maximum impact, I guess.
Fair enough. Well, thanks so much. I know you're a busy guy. Thanks so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Sure, happy to do it. Thanks.
You're welcome. And that's Steve Kornacki. He writes about politics for Salon, co-host of MSNBC's The Cycle. John Weingart staying with us for the rest of the hour. We will continue our conversation talking about New Jersey and New Jersey's Governor Chris Christie delivering last night's keynote address and taking more calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Did you watch it? What do you think? Give us a call. We'll be right back.
The WHYY Connections Festival rocks the Great Plaza at Penn's Landing. Yola Tango. Frank Turner.
After all, it was rock and roll.
Maps and Atlases.
And the moon stood stock still.
The Lawsuits.
I can't wait to get down to Tennessee.
Baby and Achilles. And more. Saturday, September 8th. More at WHYY.org/Connections Festival.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with novelist Victor Laval about subjects that have been at the center of his life and his fiction, like religion,
family mental illness, and monsters. Well, the monsters are figurative in his real life, but real in his new novel, The Devil in Silver. Join us.
This afternoon at 3, and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. We'll have the latest on Isaac. Also visit Ybor City, a Cuban neighborhood. What are Latino voters looking to hear from the GOP? That and a conversation with author Carl Hyacin, Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. Earlier this year, and even into last year, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie toyed publicly with the idea of running for president. He was apparently on a short list for a possible running mate for Mitt Romney. Last night, he got a primetime slot as the keynote speaker at the Republican National Convention in Tampa, Florida. We're talking about Governor Christie and New Jersey. And John Weingart staying with us for the rest of the hour, Associate Director of the Eagleton Institute of Politics at Rutgers University. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. So far, everyone calling us from Pennsylvania. Come on, New Jersey, give us a call. I do want to play another clip from last night, Chris Christie talking about seniors. And let's listen.
We believe in telling our seniors the truth about our overburdened entitlements. We know seniors not only want these programs to survive, but they just as badly want them secured for their grandchildren. Our seniors are not selfish. Here's what they believe. They believe seniors will always put themselves ahead of their grandchildren. And here's what they do. They prey on their vulnerabilities and scare them with misinformation for the single, cynical purpose of winning the next election. Here's their plan. Whistle a happy tune while driving us off the fiscal cliff, as long as they are behind the wheel of power when we fall.
Now again, that Chris Christie speaking last night. John, obviously, seniors, very important voters in any season, and it seems to be this election season as well. Medicare front and center, I think because of Paul Ryan's position on Medicare. What do you make of this part of Chris Christie's speech last night?
I thought that was among the more effective parts of the speech, because I think the argument that Republicans need to make is that most people agree that there are changes necessary in the Medicare system, and that any change that's of any significance that's proposed by Republicans is treated by Democrats as a wholesale attack on the program. So I think to try to, and given that Congressman Ryan is so associated with major changes in the program, I think it was important for Governor Christie to try to provide some room for the Republican ticket to argue that you can talk about changing the program while still caring about the health care of seniors and perhaps ultimately continuing to ensure the health care of seniors.
I should add that Dennis Devine was going through editing clips this morning and looking at the script that Chris Christie was reading and how he added some words, including the script says telling seniors the truth about our overburdened entitlements. Chris Christie says telling our seniors the truth about our overburdened entitlements. I don't want to get too much in the weeds here, but I wonder if he's talking about, you know, our seniors and their seniors.
Perhaps, because that was the tone of the speech, was the us and them, while at the same time there was certainly some hope on Christie's part and the party's part to make the us bigger than it is right now.
All right, let me see what Nancy from Williamstown has to say. And Nancy, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Yes, Marty, there's something that I heard in the speech last night that I haven't heard you guys comment on. Toward the end of the speech, as he's wrapping up, Christie uses the phrase, "We've got to have shared sacrifice." Now, that's a Democratic line, and if you're going to eliminate all controls on business and give them the lowest tax rate, we're not asking the upper level of our society to share any of the burden.
That's an interesting comment. Nancy, John, did you notice that as well?
I did notice that, and I think it's an important comment. In New Jersey, Governor Christie has spoken of shared sacrifice, although he does not embrace the policies Democrats would of raising taxes on the people with the highest incomes. So he is, I mean, the Democratic legislature has passed that, and Christie vetoed it. So when he talks about shared sacrifice, his examples are usually that teachers and other government people in government or who work in government should sacrifice by paying a larger percentage of their health care costs and perhaps having fewer salary increases or salary cuts. He is not talking about shared sacrifice in the way that Democrats speak of it or either now or than the way Democrats spoke of it when, you know, for instance, when the war in Iraq started and Democrats said there needed to be some shared sacrifice.
Well, and I think Democrats and others talking about shared sacrifice often refer to millionaires, but it seems like Chris Christie doesn't necessarily include those people in the shared sacrifice.
Right. His argument is that their tax rates are high enough, and if the state taxes them higher, some more of them would change their legal residence to be outside the state, and that would ultimately be bad for the state's economy.
Steve Carnegie was talking about how New Jersey, is it New Jerseyans or New Jerseyites? I'm never quite sure what you call yourselves over there.
We'll just criticize whatever you're saying.
That's fair enough. But how do people living in New Jersey, how do they feel about their governor? He's a complicated guy. He's a Republican in a largely Democratic state. How do New Jerseyans feel about Chris Christie?
Well, he's certainly a large subject of conversation. I mean, he is. There's nothing. You know, his name comes up in conversation all the time, regardless of whether you're in a conversation about politics or government to begin with. I think New Jersey is a Republican state on national issues, a Democratic state on national issues in terms of electing presidents and who we vote for presidents and senators. With governors, we tend to take turns, so we tend to have a Democratic governor for 8 years and then a Republican governor for 8 years with slight variation. But so we had Christine Todd Whitman and Tom Kane before Chris Christie. In polling, Governor Christie's popularity is a little bit under President Obama's, but they're about the same in terms of people who think they're doing a good job and people who don't. On personal characteristics, the opinions of Christie are interesting. I mean, a large number of people, if asked whether they think Christie is a bully, will say yes. But if you go deeper and say, well, is that a good thing or a bad thing, they're about equally divided, with bully being a compliment to some people and a criticism to others. I think people in New Jersey are genuinely surprised and a little bit puzzled at how he has been able to accomplish as much of his agenda as he has in his 3 years as governor. And there are some answers to that in terms of he was lucky in terms of having new leaders in the legislature who didn't have particular experience at combating a governor when he started out. But his personal skills are, I think, pretty widely respected by people who agree with him, certainly, and as well as many who don't.
Let me play just one more clip from Christie's speech last night, then we'll get back to our callers. And this is really near the end of the speech where he talks about leadership in New Jersey and makes a pitch for Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan. Let's listen.
Now, we ended an era of absentee leadership without purpose or principle in New Jersey. I'm here to tell you tonight, it is time to end this era of absentee leadership in the Oval Office and send real leaders back to the White House. America needs Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan, and we need them right now.
John, just picking up on that first sentence, when Chris Christie talks about an era of absentee leadership without purpose or principle in New Jersey, is he talking about John Corzine? Who is he referring to?
Well, it's a line that Democrats are not going to argue with, because if they do, it requires them to defend either John Corzine or Jim McGreevy, and neither, for different reasons, Democrats are not particularly eager to defend either one. But it is true that Governor Corzine was trying to impose fiscal discipline, if that's the right phrase, in his administration, and his final budget as governor, I think his final two budgets, were lower than each year than the previous year, which is a trend that, that Governor Christie has continued. But the perception of Corzine, that enabled Christie to win, and Christie is very clear when he speaks that the reason he got elected in 2009 was because voters did not think well of John Corzine, not particularly because of anything about Christie. So the perception of Christie, of Corzine, when he left office, which has only gotten much worse with his troubles more recently, was that he was not a very good governor and that he was not a very good public communicator. So Christie, by being a great public communicator, has had a particularly good act to follow from his point of view.
Let me get Suzanne from Gloucester County to join us. Suzanne, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Every time I hear Governor Christie talk about this so-called Jersey comeback, it makes my guts twist. My husband's been out of work for 3.5 years. He's still looking. My real estate taxes since Governor Christie's been in office have gone up by $1,000. So where is this Jersey comeback? Because it's not my area.
Suzanne, you live in Gloucester County. First of all, what does your husband do? What's his occupation?
He worked for a furniture company.
And looking to
get anything. And he was 58 years old when he got laid off. Nobody's going to hire a 58-year-old, and now he's 61. So, I mean, your odds go down exponentially the older you get of getting a job.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, and I know that must be a struggle for both you and your husband. Let me give John Weingart a chance to weigh in on that. And she talked about her real estate taxes going up $8,000, John?
Yeah, real estate taxes in New Jersey have long been a major, or probably the major, problem with the New Jersey tax structure, and neither party has been able to address it effectively. Mm-hmm. We pay in New Jersey a much larger percentage of the total revenue raised by governments at all levels comes from the property tax than it does in almost all mm-hmm. other states. And the effect of that is that people live in a house and they may even own it outright, and at some point they become unable to continue to live there.
Sure.
Because their property taxes have gone up so high. I think the other point with Suzanne's comment is the problem that Steve Kornacki mentioned earlier, that for governors, for a Republican governor at this point to be claiming credit for an economic boom while at the same time criticizing the president for an economic recession is a real tricky line to carry, and particularly if you're a Republican governor of New Jersey surrounded by, or at least bordered by, Democratic governors in New York and Connecticut. If the numbers in New Jersey aren't better, and in fact in some unemployment are worse than in New York and Connecticut, it's a hard argument mm-hmm. to carry out that there's a Jersey comeback going on because of policies enacted by the New Jersey governor.
And I need to just correct myself. I misheard. Apparently, Suzanne's taxes went up $1,000, not $8,000. So I apologize for that. But, Suzanne, I do appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let's see what Paul from Center City, Philadelphia has to say. Paul, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi
thanks,
there.
Marty.
You're welcome.
I heard Chris Christie say that a Romney administration would bring in Chris Christie's words, high-paying jobs. And it seems like that word jobs is something more than anything that Republicans use to bash the Obama years with. And it seems that people in Man on the Street interviews, when they're asked, they say jobs. That's what it's all about, is jobs. Mm-hmm. And I think, from what I understand, that most of the donors to the Romney campaign are big money donors, CEOs, people with corporations with vast amounts of money, who over the past 15 years have cut high-paying jobs, cut benefits, moved jobs overseas, don't really have any interest in bringing back high-paying jobs with good benefits. I just wonder why it is that so many numerically, everyday people all across the country who are ready to vote Republican believe this, and maybe if the Democrats are possibly missing an opportunity to rebut some of the claims that are being made. Thanks very much for taking my question.
You're welcome, Paul. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. John, you want to weigh in on that?
No, I'll let it stand as the comment it was.
But, I mean, it is interesting that that the campaign, the race, is supposed to be about jobs, and clearly we're hearing from people, Suzanne talking about her husband looking for a job for 3 years. It seems to me there are jobs, and then there are jobs with benefits and jobs that pay a living wage. And it'll be interesting to see what the Obama administration does, even next week at the Democratic Convention, whether they will pick up on this or not. I think
that will be. And I think in talking, you know, the morning after Governor Christie's speech, one of the difficulties he faced and that I think we're confronting talking about him is the expectations for a keynote speech are so high because of two speeches, because of Barack Obama's speech to the Democrats in 2004, and for those who remember, Mario Cuomo's speech to the Democrats in 1984. Beyond that, if you look at the people who've given keynote speeches, they're not the high point of the administration of the convention. They're not particularly shaping of the campaign in the fall. They may help motivate campaign workers to be more enthusiastic and go out and vote, but they're not the game-changing or agenda-setting event that people may have been unfairly expecting Christie to be able to deliver.
We're almost out of time here. Do you think it increases his stature within his own state, though?
I think it's like getting an Academy Award nomination without getting the Academy Award. I think you know, there's clearly a national recognition, a recognition that he's nationally popular, that if he wants to run for president in 4 years, he's off to a good start. But he didn't, hit the ball out of the park. I would say one minor thing in terms of this speech is that he didn't quote Bruce Springsteen by name, but he mentioned a Bruce Springsteen song. And for a Republican to do that is somewhat courageous and somewhat, in this era of culture wars, it's nice that he has kept his youthful infatuation with a musician, even if it's a musician who wouldn't sing at his inauguration.
Well, I know you appreciate musicians. John Weingart, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. It's a pleasure.
A pleasure to have you on. The Associate Director of the Eagleton Institute of Politics at Rutgers University, Steve Karnacki, joined us for most of the show, and he writes about politics for Salon, co-hosts MSNBC's The Cycle. Go to whyy.org/radio times to find out more about this program. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back.